The government is obsessed with contraception and sexual expression free of children. That's their main agenda.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thank you for joining us for Family Policy Matters. We're pleased to have Dr. Helen Alvarez with us on the program. Helen is a professor of law at George Mason University and the founder of Women Speak for Themselves. She is a consultant to Pope Francis's Pontifical Council for the Laity, as well as a consultant to ABC News. Additionally, Helen is chair of the Conscience Protection Task Force at the Witherspoon Institute. Helen wrote an amicus brief on behalf of the Little Sisters of the Poor in the Zuvik B. Burwell religious liberty case before the United States Supreme Court. The Supreme Court issued an opinion in that case on May the 16th, and we're going to be talking with her about that opinion and what it means for the case and for the Little Sisters of the Poor in particular. Helen, welcome to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, it's a delight. Now, Helen, before we talk about the Supreme Court's opinion in this critical religious liberty case, tell us briefly, if you would, for the benefit of our listeners, about Zuvik v. Burwell and why the Little Sisters of the Poor and other religious nonprofits challenged the federal government's contraceptive coverage mandate.
I guess it was in February of 2012. We know that in accord with the provision of the Affordable Care Act that said, you know, preventive care for women must be in certain health care policies, the Department of Health and Human Services, I'll just call them HHS, issued a regulation that said churches didn't have to provide contraception and some early abortifacients like the morning after pill, but religious institutions that were not churches, like old age homes, schools, hospitals, they had to provide it. Then they later issued a correction that said, all right, you will accommodate you in the sense that you fill out a form that says, here's my insurance plan, and here's the employees that are covered, and you put the contraception in my insurance plan for my employees, and by the way, also for their minor daughters, and you educate them, you send stuff to their house, educate them via the mail or email about contraception and abortion in connection with my health care plan. A bunch of religious, in fact, I think it was actually more evangelical than Catholic, but at least both evangelical and Catholic, and possibly other religions as well, filed lawsuits and said, this is a violation of our religious freedom. We are facilitating the provision of something that goes against our faith. And by the way, if we don't pay, you're going to fine us $100 per day per employee. So, for instance, for the Little Sisters of the Poor, a group of nuns that actually gets by 100% on begging, they were told, we're going to fine you $70 million a year unless
wow.
you provide contraception. Just
that's
the Little
unreal.
Sisters.
Yeah, wow.
So that's the origin of the lawsuits. The federal government, I can go into the legal argument a little bit more as we go on, but that's how it got started.
Now, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the Zuvik case on March 23rd of this year, and then not long after that, on May 16th, as I mentioned, the court responded with a somewhat unusual request for both religious nonprofits and the government. Tell us about the court's request or its opinion and what it means for the future of this case.
Right. So it is very interesting and rarely done. Supreme Court experts could tell you it's been done a few times before. But it seems that the court was trying to avoid a loss. That's how I read the tea leaves. They were also trying to avoid making law where the court is eight justices and it was maybe split 4-4 on parts of the religious freedom claim and maybe split 5-3 on other parts. And I do think there's an element here of not wanting to see the government hauling off the Little Sisters in cuffs, okay? I think that had to play a role. So what they said is, listen, government, you've got this entire set of exchanges where you give healthcare policies. You've said along the course of this case that, gee, women get contraception from, you know, some of the hundreds of community health centers that are funded by state money. They get it at Planned Parenthood, which the government also funds to a great deal of money. They'll get it through a spouse's plan. They'll get it over the counter. You've talked about many ways in which women could get contraception other than what the Supreme Court at oral argument occasionally referred to as hijacking the Little Sister's plan. Why don't you tell us about another way, they asked, in supplemental briefs, that you could get contraception to these employees and their minor daughters, and then we'll have the Little Sisters and the other plaintiffs respond and see if we can't come to some agreement here. Mm. So the government filed a brief where it was very grudging, and it basically said they already were using what they called the least restrictive means, that is, the means least pressuring religious freedom, in order to deliver contraception to these women and girls. And the Little Sisters and the other plaintiffs came back and said, oh, we can think of about 8 different ways you can do it, and here's a bunch of them. And that gave everybody the idea that the Supreme Court was, first of all, believing the Little Sisters in their claim that this mandate did constitute a burden on their religion, and that they were not convinced that the government's existing program was the least restrictive means of realizing its desire to funnel contraception to women and girls for free.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
For the benefit and understanding of our listeners, I know that many of them are familiar with the Hobby Lobby Conestoga Wood case, which dealt with similar RFRA claims or Religious Freedom Restoration Act claims against the Affordable Care Act contraceptive mandate. How does this case differ in kind of simple terms, if you can make it simple? How does this case, or this consolidation of actually 7 different cases, differ from the Hobby Lobby case?
A couple of things. First, Hobby Lobby was a for-profit corporation. They are not a religious order or an explicitly religious university or other institution. They are religious people who got together and formed a corporation that, as part of its, I think it's bylaws, states that we're religious people and we want to use our corporate work in order to serve God. And so they have all kinds of practices that avoid cooperation with things that they regard as problematic because of their Christian faith. But Hobby Lobby was about for-profit corporations, whereas all these cases consolidated with the Little Sisters were all about religious, explicitly religious institutions. The other thing was that Hobby Lobby had to confront the question, can a corporation, you know, can an incorporated entity be a person who practices religious freedom for purposes of getting protection for their religious freedom? And so they were really, really interesting questions, and they were settled in favor of Hobby Lobby. They said, yeah, corporations can have religious purposes. In fact, there were some terrific briefs filed in Hobby Lobby that showed that the very, you know, those who settled the U.S., right, the some of the corporations involved, the East India Tea Company, and these other British and other corporations that funded the ships that came over here and invested in the United States, actually had as part of their purpose to build a Christian nation. To proselytize, to spread Christianity to new soil. Plus, the language of the religious freedom statute that was being used in the Hobby Lobby case was very explicit about corporations being persons. The government was trying to take the position that once you incorporate, you give up your individual religious freedom, and they said, by the way, corporations had none. So the Supreme Court was not very happy with the federal government on that and said, wait a minute, so anybody who wants to, for purposes of building a business, to take the corporate form has now given up their personal religious freedom? Really? So anyway, the government lost that, and Hobby Lobby won. But remember that Hobby Lobby also won by contesting only abortifacients. And they did not have a problem with regular contraception. They only had a problem with those forms of drugs and devices that, while they're called contraceptive, can, and the government admitted this, they can destroy human embryos.
Interesting. So some important distinctions, and thank you for that explanation. I think that's very helpful to understand. Now, Helen, I know that some have characterized the SCOTUS opinion in the Zubik case as a smackdown of sorts of the government's contraceptive coverage mandate. Would you go so far as to agree with that characterization?
For the moment, because the government's obsession with contraception. I was at this wonderful conference with a variety of religious groups, and one of the things they pointed out was, you know, the fake equality business has been very good for this White House. So they go guns blazing. If women don't have contraception, they're not really free. They don't have social equality. They'll never make it in this economy. They're going back to, you know, phoneless, dateless 1700s. I mean, the government is obsessed with contraception and sexual expression free of children. It's just so evident. That's their main agenda. And I think it distracts people from what, say, they're maybe not doing on other issues, especially for women and families. But I digress. The government is so obsessed, it seems to me, that although the court in the recent decision sent these cases back below and said we vacate, that means we get rid of the opinions at the courts of appeals. And by the way, the religious institutions lost most of those cases. They got rid of all of them, both the losses and the one win. And they said, we now, because of the supplemental briefing, have a somewhat better idea regarding ways that the government can deliver contraception to women and girls working for religious institutions with less restriction on religious freedom. Now, they sent it back thinking that the government will settle with these institutions, or maybe even just rewrite its reg. I mean, you realize that with the flick of his little wrist, Obama could have made all this go away.
Right.
The hundreds of millions of dollars that his administration has spent trying to run the Little Sisters to ground, and evangelical colleges and all these other groups, he could have contracepted every woman and girl in America three times over. But that obviously was not his point. The point was to bring religion to heel. And so it is not clear to me that he will settle these cases at the courts of appeals. He may continue to argue, all right, even with this new round of supplemental briefing and clarifying other ways to get contraception to women and girls through these religious institutions, we still think the Little Sisters lose. Now, the smackdown part of the opinion is this. The government was actually arguing that the Little Sisters didn't have any religious freedom complaint at all because they weren't even burdened. That having to give the government the information so that the government can attach drugs and devices against their religion to their insurance plan was not a violation of their religion. Why not? Well, because the government said it wasn't. And the government was arguing that it gets to decide whether your religious exercise is burdened. And that is a very frightening thing.
It
the government
certainly is.
Can tell the Little Sisters, you're confused about your theology. We'll let you know when your conscience is burdened. It seems to me, although the court swore up and down in its short opinion, that it did not make a holding on this question. Does the government of the Little Sisters get to decide that there was enough of a vote to find a burden? Otherwise, I don't think they would have sent the case back down. They would have just said there's no burden, the case can't go forward. The other thing about this is that I think, even though they swore up and down they weren't making a finding on least restrictive means, clearly they wouldn't have asked for supplemental briefing or sent it back down if they didn't think that something in those supplemental briefs supplied a means less restrictive on religious freedom to deliver contraception.
Well, Helen, I know that you've worked closely with the Little Sisters of the Poor throughout this process in this case. We will certainly continue in prayer for a great outcome as the lower courts revisit this issue and make a ruling, hopefully in a very favorable way for the Little Sisters of the Poor and the other organizations that are involved in this case. But before we leave, Helen, I want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know where they can go to learn more about the Little Sisters of the Poor case and also about your organization, Women Speak for Themselves.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, womenspeakforthemselves.com. Our motto, we call it Empowering Local Intelligence. We know that things get done locally by real women, like in the pro-life movement, which women kept alive all these decades for the most part. We want to do the same thing for religious freedom and for a notion of women's freedom that's actually in line with women's experience.
Dr. Helen Alvar, I want to thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters this week.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. to listen to our radio show online, and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.